So welcome back to the second part of this special chat we're having with Brian Horton. It's me, Peter and Andy Bravery with Brian Horton, legend of the club. We've had a great chat in the first part of this conversation about your upbringing and playing career and the stuff to do with the Albion in particular. We will, in this part, get on to talking about your management in a little bit more detail and what's been going on since and what you think is going to happen in the upcoming games the Albion have got as well. But first to mention, we are sponsored by Seagulls Over London, who can be found at www.seagullsoverlondon.com for any details on membership and other inquiries. As always, and the three of us are all members, aren't we, Peter and Andy? And as such, we're obviously delighted to have you with us, Brian. And what we wanted to do in this second part then was to talk about the management. But before we do, I think, Andy, you were going to come back in with another question, weren't you, to do with leaving clubs as a player?
Well, yeah, and I guess you could even translate that into when you're a manager, when you've certainly served as long as Brian did in football. And I just wondered how a player psychologically deals with, I was just thinking about what you'd said about Port Vale and then Brighton, that, you know, one day you're playing a football match and then that night you might be moving, and how you deal with that psychologically, because obviously once you've made the move, then you're performing for the new team. I just wondered how you kind of cope with that, Brian.
It's difficult. Like the Port Vale one, I knew nothing about, but they obviously, which you said, they needed the money. And it was time for me to go, and it was a fantastic move to come to Brighton. The Brighton to Luton one was totally different because I didn't want to leave Brighton. I got another year of my contract to go. We just stayed up by winning those four games, and I thought we'd be playing, you know, Division One football the following year. And all of a sudden, within a matter of days, we've gone. But you have to make the most of it, which I did. David Pleat made me captain straight away. Great players are joined. David Moss, Ricky Earle, Brian Steen, Paul Walsh came in a bit later on. We had a really, really good team. And then I could have probably stayed because I got another year left on my contract at Luton. When Hull City came, they asked David about my situation as being player manager. He recommended me along with Jack Charlton. God bless him, Emily Hughes, God bless him. And some top people in football recommended me to Don Robinson. I met Don. Don was an ex-wrestler and himself made multimillionaire from Scarborough, knew nothing about football, and he admitted that. I met him in Leeds for 10 minutes. He offered me the job within 10 minutes. That's what I'll pay you. That's what it is. But you take it or leave it, and I want to know in the morning. That's how sudden that was. So I had to make my mind up. I had to speak to people quickly about Hull City again, another, you know, sleeping giant, basically, big city. Miles and miles from anywhere, going completely the other way up to Hull, Yorkshire. And that was a hard decision, but one that I thought at 34 again, thought quickly about it. It's maybe time, you know, that he's coming to play at the top level. So why not going as player manager? And it worked. I got promotion my first year again. Steve McLaren, Billy Whitehurst, had some good players. And again, we should have won the league that year, in my opinion, but we were up again and a couple of games to go. And once you're up, sometimes it's a very hard thing to keep it going. But had five wonderful years there with a great chairman who never interfered in one football decision all the time I was there. It was just fantastic times with him.
Do you find it in a way easier when you were player manager? Because you could, it wasn't, you know, if you're a manager, it must be all quite difficult if players don't follow your instructions and things go wrong. But at least if you're on the pitch, you've got like some sort of control. Or was it quite a tough thing to balance the two?
It's a hard thing to do. I'll just tell you one story. We were 4-1 down at Leighton Orient at half time, and we were near the top of the league, and we were absolutely awful. And I was playing a game. So I said to my number two walking off, I said, get into him. I said, get into him and get into me. First and foremost, get into me. And he did, big style, and ended up winning the game 5-4. So when you're in a team and it's playing badly and you're playing badly and you're the manager, it is a difficult situation. But when you come back and you win 5-4, it makes it an easier thing to do. And it is tough because, you know, you're going out to watch players as a manager, you're going out Tuesday night, Wednesday night. It's not ideal preparation to be going into training next morning. You've been out late the night before, and it was hard. But I did it. I did it for 3 years, and then just started playing the reserves with the kids just to help them. And it finished a great career as a, so I was probably about 36 when I actually did retire.
Had you always thought you were going to be a manager? Do you think from an early stage of your playing career, had you already considered it? Because I think a lot of players do, particularly if they've captain material, they tend to, I think. Was that the case for you?
Yeah, it was. And as I said, I started my coaching badges at the university at Brighton when I took my prelim down there. And yes, it's what I wanted to do. I wanted to, because I'd been let go as a kid, and what I'd done to go non-league back into the league and to Brighton and to well, particularly at Brighton. And now I'm thinking, where's my next move? Didn't think it'd be that time. I thought I might have gone into the coaching staff at Brighton with Alan if he'd have stayed, and Ken Craggs. And so, but then when I got to Luton, David, who was really, really into his coaching side with the FA and stuff, he was saying to me, it's time you did your badges, you should be doing. Well, I'd said I've already started them. So, and he sort of was pushing me that way. Not that he wanted to get rid of me as a player, but when I was like 34, he was virtually saying, Hull are in for you. And I could have gone to other places, player coaches, and but that one really wet my whistle, basically, to go as player manager at a big club like Hull City.
Yeah. So, I was going to say, you went to Hull, Oxford, Man City, Huddersfield, and then you landed on the first of two roles with former clubs as a player, Brighton and Port Vale. The year with Albion, 98 to 99, obviously for us it had been a horrendous period off the field and in matters related to ownership and so on, too numerous to go into here. I'm sure you're aware of the background of it. What was it like taking the job? Were you reluctant given the circumstances at the time, albeit it was a club and a place you'd enjoyed being at before?
No, I got a phone call from Dick Knight and he met me at Mochamore, which is a big, beautiful hotel not far from where I live. And he was up on business school and he said, would you meet me just for coffee and talk about the Albion and what have you? And then he threw that at me about going back as manager. I looked at the situation and it was a tough decision. You know, they got no ground, they got no office. Derek Allen and Sally's secretary were working out of an office by the railway station in Brighton. No training facilities or training at the university, and the pitch was like a quagmire. It was shocking. And playing at Gillingham, you know, I mean, it was just crazy. And it was only a club like Brighton, I've said this many times, of supporters again, taking what, 4,000 or 5,000 to Gillingham. And we just about stayed up because somebody went down because of irregularities. But I thought, gosh, we'll ever come into here, you know. Anyway, so Dick Knight, it was just for that small period. And then Dick Knight and his board talked me into staying again. So I said, well, if I'm staying, I'm changing some of the coaching staff. I'm bringing Dean Wilkins in and Martin Inchwood in to start the youth policy off. The first team was second bottom of the bottom division. The reserves are bottom of the league. The youth team are bottom of the league. It was just absolutely gone. So I said to him, well, if I'm staying, I'm going to get about 18 players out, 18 in. And he went, what? And I said, I'm going to get 18 out, 18 in. I said, they're just used to losing. The whole football club is just full of just losing all the time. The reserves, the youth team, everybody. So I'm going to shake it up. I'm going to do it, which I did. And one of the big things I got, I mean, it's in the book about Holsgrove. I signed Holsgrove on a fee. He played pre-season, played a game at Lewis in pre-season. We sold him for 110 grand, I think. So more than paid for my salary there, getting that one free transfer in. But it was chaos in one way. Yet the players I bought in started that spirit off again, and you know, to have to go. But that was the biggest part, getting to players. One of them lived in Southampton, but some of the boys lived in London. And they all had to travel. I'm travelling from Manchester. I'm staying down there, obviously, all week because we're training. But then I go back home on a Saturday. My twins are growing up. And it was hard. It was really hard on the fans, on the players, on the staff. But Are you still there?
Yeah, still there. We lost visuals, but we can still hear you at the moment, Brian.
It'll go off in a minute because somebody's just ringing me.
So oh, okay, yeah.
He'll hang up in a minute.
No problem. It's not David Pleat again, is it? Oh, he's frozen, actually. Well, see if he comes back in. Peter. So, oh, here we are. Yeah.
So Steve Parkin, with us, I think, Steve Parkin is a big friend of mine, and we worked together at all when we were together with Phil Brown. It was a hard time, but the sad part about it, we're in the playoffs when I got a call from Port Vale about, you know, they wanted me to go back to Port Vale. I got some more money because they got my year salary, which I know is not, because a lot of fans thought I'd let the club down in that way. And I felt it that way. That was, and I mean it really sincerely, was the toughest decision I ever had to make in football. And had they been at the Goldstone, or even sure, but to because was incredible that year, and it just didn't happen. But then they got back to Brighton, and things started to happen again, didn't it, with Dean?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we'd had a question actually from Duncan Rouse, a friend of ours and a fellow member of Seagulls Over London. You pretty much answered it actually, but he did say, what made you leave for Port Vale when it looked as if the Brighton side that season might challenge for the playoffs? I mean, we'd certainly had turned things around, haven't we, a bit, I think, at that point.
Yeah, I mean, Port Vale were in a mess. They were virtually bottom of the league in the championship.
Yeah.
So I'm walking out of one where I've got it going again, or we've got it. Just, you know, my staff, Jeff Wood, and as I said, I mentioned the other guys, we got it going a little. But, and they'd done a great job at the championship at the bottom of the league. What am I doing? But I turned that round and we stayed up that season. So it was, as I said before, that was probably the toughest decision I had to make. But my children were going to school in the Manchester area. Am I going to move them down? Am I going to move again? It was messy, and it's just a shame, and it's one that I do deeply regret, the fact that how it worked out. But luckily, they got back on track. They got back to with Dean and got the club going again.
Yeah, I'll go to Peter in a second. Just one other follow up question from Duncan that we had. Also, he said, "Are you surprised that the two clubs have ended up in such different positions in terms of?" Or different fortunes in terms of where they've been since that time. Obviously, with Brighton doing so well, and Port Vale have struggled somewhat in the lower reaches, haven't they? Continue to struggle, I should say.
Yeah, they have, and finances come into it. I mean, what they've done for the football club at Brighton is absolutely incredible with the stadium. And Phil Brown and I, our youth team, when we're at where would we be at? Swindon, we just got a friendly game playing Brighton kids at the new training ground. Went down, Chris Hooton was the manager at that time, and went down, have a look at it. Wow, what a training ground. So that's how it's developed, isn't it? The fact that the training ground is absolutely out of this world. The ground is absolutely incredible. And obviously the finances to get better players in. And that's basically what it's all about. You know, it's about finances. And so, you know, the bigger clubs generally do well, the smaller clubs struggle. And you know, that's that Brighton now, until they can hopefully get to the next level then and start getting the bigger players in, because that's what it'll take for Brighton to be, you know, successful and maybe look at that top six or look at the top half and maybe look at Europe and stuff like that, which is what the Blooms deserve for what they've done at that football club.
Yeah, absolutely. Peter, back to you.
Just a couple of questions around Gillingham. I mean, firstly, what you're saying, obviously, about how where the club was when you came in as manager and being in the playoffs. I mean, how would you say that ranks in terms of your achievements? Because frankly, we were terrible that first season of Gillingham, and actually played some quite decent football while you were managing the first half of that following season. We beat some quite decent teams. I mean, remember beating Rotherham 4-1 at home, and Brentford, who were doing really well at home on Boxing Day, and actually had some really good results. And it kind of turned around from the first season when we were dreadful. And the other thing was around one of your signings, who obviously was a certain player from Stansted, who we signed in the pre-season you were there, who went on to make 350, 400 appearances amazingly in Gary Hart. And how it, what it, you know, it must be really good to know that one of your signings carried on to all the way through to for so long at Wivdeen and was at Albion for 10 years.
Well, I've mentioned Jeff Wood, and Jeff was brilliant to have, because he knew the players more down south than I did at that particular time. And he'd mentioned Harty, and we got him in a, played him in a game in the reserves, and he was tremendous, and a tremendous character and goal scorer. I think we gave him, was it a grand and something for him, didn't we? That's, you know, I mean, it was just, it's almost equivalent to my pint of shandy when I went from Ensford to Port Vale. But it was difficult, because you've got now, you know, unless you're southern based and a club didn't have a lot of money at that time, how can you move players from north to south? And, you know, which you obviously have to sometimes. You can't just keep by getting players from down south. Jeff Minton was a good player, and I took Jeff to Port Vale eventually, didn't I, where he, you know, when his contract was up. And we just got it moving. It was a shame. Shame is, it's the wrong word in a way, because football's football and you have to make decisions. But I genuinely mean that was the toughest decision I ever had to make.
And what about in terms of ranking in your achievements? I mean, while obviously you didn't actually win anything with Albion, I mean, to turn it around from the situation it was in to being in the top six was pretty impressive.
It was. I was proud of that and what we'd done. And I say we, when I'm including Jeff in that again. And Ken Craggs, who became my chief scout. And, you know, it was a team effort. But the one game now, we beat Brentford on Boxing Day. I mean, I give the lads Christmas Day off. Some people give Christmas Day off. I very rarely did. But that day I did. I gave them Christmas Day off. I said, look after yourselves. I then have got to travel from Manchester to Gillingham on Boxing Morning for a 12 o'clock kickoff, I think it was. And I said, look, you know, look after yourselves. No drinking, or have a glass with the family, and look after yourselves. So, the chairman of Brentford at that time was Ron Nodes, who'd been chairman of Palace and what have you. And he was at Brentford at the time, and he just sacked his manager just before that game, or a few weeks before, and he took over. Anyway, we smashed them 4-0. He said to me, did you do preparation-wise, Brian? I said, I gave him the day off. He said, well, I got mine in. Because now he'd become the manager. He'd sacked the manager, so he'd become the manager for a few weeks. And he said, oh, I got mine in. We trained properly on Christmas morning. Went to Gillingham and stayed overnight. So they did it properly, as you probably would want to. I'd give them players a day off, which sometimes players react that way because they think, well, I think that's fair. And we've beaten 4-0. So it just shows you, doesn't it, the mentality of football players and football. But we did have some good results. We had Richie Barker was playing well at that time. And Richie was one where they went, when I said, I'm keeping him, he went, well, he ain't done that well. And I went, well, that's my decision. And so I kept him, and he did do well for me.
The Bear. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was a good player. I have to say, I was gutted when you left as well. I was thinking, oh no, because things were on the downer. But it's one of those scenarios, isn't it? As you say, it's a tough decision anyway, but it's completely understandable. I think, really, all things considered. But after Port Vale, Brian, you later then went on to manage Macclesfield Town between 2004 and 2006, and then after doing some other bits, you returned to them in 2012. And it's tragic what's happened to them, hasn't it? They're just last year, they folded, which is such a shame.
It was crazy times again. I was at work after Port Vale. I walked out of Port Vale. I virtually resigned. I couldn't work with it. They got taken over by a supporters group, and I couldn't work with a guy that was meant to be my chairman. It was a personality clash, and I chose not to stay. So we sorted it out. I left, and I was quite enjoying my life at that time. It's coming towards the end of the season. Thought I'd be looking for something start of next season. And I got a phone call from Mac. I think it was five games to go at the bottom of the league. Would I go and take over at Mac and see what I can do? And I looked at the situation and people thought I was crazy. People I've known for a long time, what are you doing? And I went, well, I'm not working, and I'll try and keep them up, you know, and I changed the system straight away. We won the first game at York 1-0. We won the next one. We drew the next one. And we were safe with one game to go. So I kept them up. And then they talked me into staying for another season. We got in the playoffs. Big John Parkin got sent off at Swansea with a few games to go. And I believe if we only got sent off, we beat them that night, we'd have gone up automatic. And I had a good time there. The following season, I had to sell John. He went to my old club, Old City, for about 250 grand, which is an awful lot of money then for Mac. And once you lose, you start to lose your best players. You have no chance. And then we didn't start off well. And I left Mac. I shouldn't have gone back the second time. I say I'd never only regrets. That is one regret I do have that I went back the second time, because I kept them up first time with five games to go. They had a few more than that the second time I went back, but they didn't have as many good players or players that wanted to particularly do it. So that was a mistake.
Yeah, it's a shame to see what's happened actually in the recent times with them, but it's the state of affairs, isn't it, nowadays? What you've been doing recently, though, let's talk about your book now. So you've had the book 2000 Games, A Life in Football, isn't it, I think it's called, which has just been released, I think, late last year. Is that right? So yeah, how did that come?
Can you see it there?
Yeah,
got it. See it, yeah. Excellent. Good. And it's published by, it's published by Pitch Publishing, which I think is something to do with Paul Camelin, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, it is.
So his...
it is.
Yeah,
what happened was that a guy called Tim Rich, a writer, he was doing a book on Man City managers. And obviously it was my chapter, and he rang me up and said, could I come round your home and go through it with you before we print it? Said he'd come round, and he went, wow, he said, you've got some good stories, haven't you? And I went, well, I should have after 2000. And he went, looked it up, and he went, wow, 2000 games. There's only Alex Ferguson and Graham Turner done that amount of games as a player and as a manager and as a director of football stroke. Coordinator, as I was called, at Southend, and he said that'd be a great title for the book. So, and to do with him, they tell me it's such a good time as that, and hopefully we'll do that one day. So it was just something to do that really I wanted to do, but Tim always said, don't do it till the end, because there's always a last chapter. So I wouldn't say that I would never go back in the game, because I probably would if it was the right thing to do, but I've had a fantastic innings in football. I wouldn't change many things, very, very little. And I've had a wonderful career.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think I look forward to reading it. I haven't read it yet, but I look forward to reading it, certainly. I know Andy's kicking himself he didn't get it for Christmas, actually. He didn't put it on his Christmas wish list. that's one for your birthday then, probably, whenever that is. Yeah. but it looks pretty interesting. And certainly 2,000 games is some achievement. It's absolutely brilliant. Fair play to you for that. And, I mean, in relation to that, what do you think are the things of which you're most proud, both as a player and as a manager? And have you got any regrets on or off the pitch from your time? I'm sure this is all in the book, but for anyone that hasn't read it yet.
I think one of the biggest things that gives me the most satisfaction is to do over 1,000 games as a manager, because there's only, I don't know, about 30 done it now, maybe a couple more or a couple less, but there's only that number ever done it. You know, to manage 1,000 games takes some doing. Because particularly today, because there's no longevity with managers. I had 5 years at all. I had five at Oxford with Kevin Maxwell, who was a fantastic chairman that never got involved in any team selections, buying or selling. He let me manage the football club. 5 years with Bill Bell at Port Vale, exactly the same. So to have three chairmen for 5 year stints is unheard of in these days. It's unheard of. And David Pleat had that at Luton with his, with Mr. Mortimer, who's chairman. And it, and you know, when you, yeah, if you mess up, you mess up and you get the sack. That's how it should be. But to get, sometimes people know, think they know more than you, then, and I'm not one of those that, I listen to David Pleat now, and his knowledge is, and Alan Moore, because their knowledge is unbelievable. But when I get somebody that's not played or managed and to try and tell me what to do, then I have no time. Yeah. So in the book, obviously those 3 5-year stints did play a big part of that. But again, satisfaction. And I spoke to one this morning, my cousin who played in the team, shows a photograph of our school team at 11, and he was in that team. And I still speak to 3 or 4 of those players now, or mates now. So that to go back and just write about those days, it was great satisfaction.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, I know you did say in regards to the bit about regrets, you didn't, you don't like to look back. I guess if there was, I mean, maybe something like the cup final that you mentioned earlier, not playing that, but in general, no major regrets then from your time.
No, because although I didn't play in the cup final, I went to Luton and got a medal for winning the championship, which exactly. Was shooting. Yeah, so yeah. That was brilliant, you know. And then to go and play another 2 years in the top flight, when obviously Mike Bailey thought I couldn't play at the top flight anymore, again, you know, prove people wrong. And I've always liked doing that, proving people wrong and showing, you know, a bit of character. And that's what I liked in players. I like characters. I don't mind managing egos or characters. I think the game needs them.
Yeah. And I think that's right. And as you said, if you don't do one thing, something else might happen. If you do something else might not happen. You never know. By closing one door, you open another one, don't you? And what you missed out on, you can never really be sure. In terms of other funny memories, strange occurrences, or interesting stories, is there anything else that stands out from your career?
Well, yeah, it was funny yesterday. I'm watching Lincoln play the other day, and I don't know if I'll put this in my book, actually. But we were playing Lincoln on Tuesday night at Sinsel Bank, and we were going to travel up in the morning, because that's what we'd normally travel up in the morning, late morning, have a bit of lunch, go to bed in the afternoon, get a pre-match, play the game, and then come back right after the game. Anyway, we got a tip for a horse. We were at the ground, and I was always the first there. I was always early. And we had a tip from a horse from someone. And I said to the players, shall we back it? So we had a whip round. He wanted to back it. And we went round the bookies round the corner from the Goldstone. And there was a Brighton fan in the bookies. And he was made up that we were talking. I told him about the tip. And he went, right. He said, I'm going to give you my lucky mascot. It was a little sphinx. He said, I'm going to give you my lucky mascot. And I want you to have it to keep. I said, okay, I will do. So Sphinx has been on my key ring since that, and that was 1977. That's been on my key ring every day of my life. The horse won. I scored a 30-yard volley that night. We won 2-0. Steve Piper got the other goal, but that might be wrong, but I scored. So that lucky Sphinx. So the horse won. I scored the goal. We won the game, and that Sphinx has stayed with me ever since. I don't think that's in the book either, that little story.
Excellent. A bit of an exclusive, isn't that one?
yeah, it is.
Wow, that's, yeah, brilliant. So lucky charms. That's always a good thing, isn't it? Are you quite superstitious, do you think, overall?
I'm not really, but that used to be with me every Saturday. That Sphinx went everywhere I went, and I've still got it today. And, just little things like that. I mean, I'm not a superstitious person, really. I mean, there's just so many days that you have in football that are just incredible. The chairman was fantastic at Brighton. You know, he used to call me Capitano, and I'd see him because he had his office on the ground at that early time. And I used to see him in the morning, go, "Morning, Capitano, anything you want?" And I'd say, occasionally, I'd just throw something and go, "We could do it a golf day, Chairman." And he'd say, "Right, you organise it. The board, the directors have got to play in it, and the staff have got to play in it, as well as the players. You book it, and I'll pay for it, or the club will pay for it." And we did, and we'd go and play, say play the Dyke Golf Club. I'd book a day there, and we'd have lunch together, and probably get a couple of trophies for whoever won it. And it was just unbelievable times, you know, the things that we would do down there.
Superb. So you didn't have any superstitions getting on the pitch either. You didn't have to put one shoe on before the other one in particular order or anything like that.
Well,
or say something as you went out.
No, because I was always captain. When I saw, I always went out first. It was just one of those things.
Yeah,
when,
true.
When I became player manager, although I wasn't captain, I made somebody else captain, and I always used to be last out. I always wanted to be last out. But again, I don't know if I put this in my book, but Glenn Wilson, God bless him, Glenn had been a player, coach, physio, everything at Brighton Hove Albion. And he used to stand by the door as we were walking out at the Goldstone with a bottle of scotch, and you had to have a sip of scotch just before you walked out. Seriously, you're laughing. And I can't stand scotch. I can't drink scotch. But you'd have a drink of it, and you felt like you'd fight the world. And everybody, that was what it was. It was a ritual that all the players had to have a little sip of whiskey out of it on the way out.
Superb.
No wonder we were fighting on the pitch.
And the things you look back on with most fondness from your playing days, when you're reflecting on any of the period of your career, actually, what do you look on if you had to pick one thing with most fondness? Is there an individual moment's time? Period.
My debut at Port Vale, obviously, and I played against Archie Gemmell. He was at Preston, I was at Port Vale. We beat them 1-0. Yeah. Obviously, that was a great moment. That was my debut. My first goal was a goal at Bury for Port Vale. Going to Brighton, just the first season, get promotion, you know, because never had promotion before. It was just third division all the time at Port Vale. And then to go and play in such a good team, and as I said, we should have won the league. Mansfield won it. We should have beat Mansfield 5 at home, 5-0, and we should have won it that year. Then, obviously, going up, missing out on promotion, well, that was a hard day where we missed out. That was tears. We missed out on promotion. We thought we were up, thought they'd scored. It was Tottenham v Southampton, wasn't it? Thought they'd scored and we were up. But well played to the gaffer, because he kept virtually the same team, added a few more, and he always put some good players in. And then to go and do it to follow, which is a hard thing to do, is to go and follow it up again, and then but have to go to Newcastle and win the last game. You know, that takes some determination. And Loro didn't play that day; broke his arm. And you know, we were missing him because he was such a good player.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a parallel, isn't there, with us getting promoted into the top flight this time round as well. It's the same thing. We went again after Crawley missing out and managed to get over the line. So it's interesting how many parallels there are. I'm hoping if we go on a cup run, it's not going to end with us losing a cup final and getting relegated. We'll have to see. But turning things back to that, actually, the Albion nowadays, what are your thoughts on the club so far? In general, in the top flight so far this season, in particular,
obviously Graham Potter's come in and trying to change the philosophy of the football club. Chris Hughton did a great job keeping him in the top flight, which takes some doing. I had Graham as a player at Macclesfield Town in my first stint. He was my left. He was my left wing back. Good footballer. Very quiet. Quiet person, went to university, did lots of other things, went to Sweden and did what he did in Sweden, which was incredible. I sat with him at the Etihad a couple of years ago when he, how long's he been there now? Is this his second full season?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he came to, well, it must have been last season then. Well, yes, it was, obviously. He came up to watch Man City play because Brighton were due to play Man City. And I sat with him in so I go to Man City an awful lot. We're not working, and they look after me fantastic, as Brighton do when I come down, as Luton do, as Port Vale do. So, but he's trying to take it to a different level in terms of the way they play, possession based, and that's why it was a tough game last night to play, to keep possession the way, try and play on that pitch. But he did well at Swansea, so he's trying to change the way they play. And they've got to try and get to that next level now, haven't they? And I would love to see them do it. The owners, as I've said, the Bloom family are fantastic. I keep in touch as much as I can. And I would love to come down and obviously do the book, sign my book, to watch them play again. We had a reunion not long ago. They were actually playing Newcastle last season. And it was anniversary of when we took what we'd done. So all the lads came down. We had a great reunion. The Blooms looked after us fantastically well at the football club, and it was a great day just to walk out on that pitch. I would have loved to play it on there. Never mind walk on it. It's fantastic. But I'm pleased they're doing well. But they've got to now get to that next level. I mean, you know, they're fourth bottom at the moment, and yeah. they can't afford to be down there. They need to be better than that.
Yeah. What's your hunch for Albion? Also for Man City, one of your former clubs, in terms of the title race, what's your hunch on both those matters? Do you reckon it's a Brighton survival, Man City title win, double?
I think they'll be close again. Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah, obviously I want Brighton to stay up and I think they will. I think they will stay up. I think they've got players who are capable of winning games, but obviously they've got to get people scoring more goals and sharing more goals. Man City are just on a roll at the moment. They play some unbelievable football. Mm. And in my opinion, Kevin De Bruyne is the best midfield player in the world at the moment. He's just incredible. And I've had the Agüeros and now Foden's coming through. I met him recently in town. I'd never met Pep before, but I met him it was my 70th birthday at Vincent Company's. They'd announced it was his testimonial year and he had a big dinner in town. And it was my 70th birthday. Gary Lineker and Hugh Ferris from Radio Manchester were doing all the stuff on the stage. And Hugh Ferris said, "We've got an ex-manager in today, tonight, Brian Houghton. Brian, take a bow." All the players were in there, the wives. Noel Gallagher did a piece because it was for Vincent Company for his testimonial night. And later on in the night, I'm talking, it's getting on for midnight, and feel somebody on my left-hand shoulder and it's Pep Guardiola, and he's come over and he just said, "I've come over just to say happy birthday, Brian." And I was like a young kid again, getting somebody's autograph. And he had a photograph of me and my wife, and I just said to him, I said, "I come to City a lot at the moment and love the football you're playing, and I'd like to come and see you train." He said, "Anytime," but obviously the pandemic stopped it. I said, "I haven't been able to go yet. I go almost the 23s when I can, the 21s at City, because I live that close. But I still go to other games when it was allowable, obviously not since this pandemic's on, but they play some unbelievable football."
Yeah, they do, don't they? They're a cracking team. And I wouldn't be surprised if they win it now, given all things considered. I think with Liverpool getting hindered by injuries and lack of form, City are on their coattails now. Well, next up for City, of course, is the little matter of Brighton. have we got any chance of getting a result there? It's tough, isn't it?
Well, I hope they come and have a go, because what happens, and I said I did the radio for Radio Manchester, which I said before, and I'm doing the Palace game, which is next weekend.
Yeah.
Sides just come and defend. They just come and put 10 men behind the ball. Alan Mulry would have never done that. David Pleat would have never done that. And I would never have done that. And they think, right, we'll go for a point, and if we can get a nil-nil, and they have, 90% possession and 10% for the opposition, and sooner or later they're going to score generally, aren't they? I know sort of Newcastle, West Brom went to Liverpool the other week and did it, didn't they, where they played,
yeah,
you know, they said they played 6-4 none when everybody behind the ball and get a goal off a corner. I think if you do that, you're asking for trouble to go to the Etihad, and so you might as well go and have a go. It obviously it'll be a tough game for Brighton, but I want them both to do well. I want all my old clubs to do well. I don't look back at one and think, "Oh, I hope they get relegated. I hope they don't do well." There's not one that I wish that on.
And Andy and Peter, I don't know if you fancy our chances, because we have taken the game to City before. It didn't work out too well, actually, in the end, although we were actually unlucky with the scoreline in one of the previous games. Any hopes from you guys that we can get a result? Shake of the head from Peter.
For tomorrow, it sounds, on Wednesday, it sounds like no Bissouma, obviously, no Lallana, no Dempsey, no Welbeck. So, yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I think we've got to probably keep our powder dry for the weekend, maybe. Andy.
I guess two things have got to happen. One, we've got to take our chances. Secondly, we've got to defend set ball situations. And thirdly, we always look a little bit better when we play away from home, so you never know.
Yeah.
But I'm not predicting a Brighton win, I have to say.
No, I'll go for a 2-0 City win, I think, in this one. But I'm hoping I'm wrong. And in fact, I could be wrong. I might be happy I'm wrong if it's it could be worse, couldn't it? We'll see. Any other questions for Brian, guys, before we wrap up? No, I think we've covered quite a bit of ground.
Thanks so much as well. It's been really interesting chatting with you.
It has. We could chat for hours, but we probably better get back to our respective spouses and so on shortly. But it's been absolutely brilliant to give us so much time, Brian. Really appreciate it. The book, just to remind people, if you haven't got it, why not, I say, even though I haven't got it yet either. But it's called 2000 Games, A Life in Football. It's available all good bookshops and online stores, etc., I'm sure. Well, bookshops, you can't go and get one at the moment anyway, with this lockdown. But available online, I'm sure, from all good outlets. And on that note, I think I just wanted to finish one quote, actually, from our friend Spencer, who I believe you know, and who wrote a chapter in his book, A Few Good Men, about you. The beginning of his chapter reads, "In 2006, while interviewing Alan Mullery on the subject of his recently published autobiography, I asked the former Albion manager exactly how influential Brian Houghton had been, both as a captain and player. He was the manager on the field," replied the former Spurs and England midfield star. "He was just a natural born leader and without a doubt, the best captain I ever had. We couldn't have achieved what we did without him because everybody followed his example. And he was a fantastic player. The only time we ever really faltered as a team was when he was missing," which says everything. And I think that's a good way to end. You really were a legend for the club, Brian. I think you're loved by all who remember you. And we look forward, hopefully, to seeing you again at some point. Hearing you might be able to come to a Seagulls Over London meeting. More likely it'll be a Zoom, really, by the way things are at the moment. But either way round, thank you very much for joining us. And from Andy and from Peter and from I, we could just leave with the usual words on our podcast. Peter, stand or fall?
Up the Albion.